Hey, what's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd and Canucks insider Thomas Drantz here. Drantz are also covering the team at The Athletic. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Kintec. Go ahead and turn that mic on. There we go.
Kintec, they support us. Let them support you.
Absolutely. They're very supportive. That's just their nature. We were hyping this up. 650? Yes.
Okay.
Don't worry.
Oh, no, I just wanted to make sure that people knew where to text in their trade ideas. But yeah, let's start with the news of the day, which is that the show, which we're arguing about the title of still, but yes. I think it should be called All Your Trade Ideas Suck, and here's why. We're going to postpone that one day.
Yes.
24 hours.
Yeah.
Because we're not a duo that would waste a substantive Canucks news day during the All-Star
during
break.
The bye week. You got to take advantage of these when they happen. So we'll do that, and we pushed Bukala, our normal Wednesday guy, who wants in on this as well. He's going to enjoy it.
Wants in on this.
He was excited when we floated it to him.
I mean, he laughed, but he might have been humoring me.
Fair enough.
Anyway, he's in. Yeah, he's going to come on the show tomorrow to do this. We'll also have Jeremy Colleton. I don't think we'll throw...
No, we're not going to do it with Colleton.
I might check with him. I might see if I'm going to see if there's any Abbotsford ones
all right.
that he'd be comfortable laughing about.
But yeah, so we'll do that tomorrow. And then so this is your chance. You still have another chance, much like Ebenezer Scrooge. You've been given another chance to text in your trade ideas for the show.
What day is it today, sir? Why? It's All Your Trade Ideas Suck and Here's Why Day.
That's right. Exactly. You've been given a reprieve. You can text in 650-650. But the reason we're pushing it is, of course, that the Canucks announced today general manager Patrick Alvin signing a multi-year extension,
three-year
extension with
confirmed.
The team, confirmed by Jim Rutherford. And he spoke with the media today as well, as you heard on Sportsnet 650. As a reminder, of course, we will have the crossover with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal here in about 5 or 6 minutes. So, first of all, I mean, no surprise, obviously. We heard after the Rutherford extension. And,
we knew
this
was coming.
You just read the writing on the wall. Of course, Alvin's going to get the extension as well. Beyond that, I thought it was... Look, Alvin is, we know, pretty tight-lipped. You know, he's not as forthcoming necessarily with information as Jim Rutherford is, but still a fairly interesting press conference from Patrick Alvin this morning.
See, I thought there was way more to chew on than I would have expected. Like, if you'd set the line, because obviously that's how I think,
yes.
at 3.5 things to chew over, I would have bet the under all day. But I think we went over. I think there was actually some interesting insight into his view of sustainability,
mm-hmm.
which I actually think is a loaded topic ahead of this trade deadline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought there was some surprisingly interesting commentary about the Pettersson extension, in particular the idea of you can't give the whole pie to one player, I thought was a very telling little tidbit. You know, I thought his answer about teams asking him about the Canucks prospects was a fascinating little nugget for us to get into, and we'll get into all of that. But my overall impression, and I've sort of got a take, and I've got an impression, and I'll do them both in short order. What do you want to hear first? I'll actually leave it to you.
Do the take first.
You want the take first?
Sure.
The take is 3-year extension for Alvin, which will kick in at the end of next season.
Mm-hmm.
3-year extension for Jim Rutherford on the same timeline. That dovetails exactly with what remains of Quinn Hughes' sweetheart second contract. That's it. The Canucks have told us, like, the language of the deals is this is it. This is a 4-year window now. And the priority that Alvin and Rutherford have been assigned, not explicitly, but implicitly with the structures and timing, the matching timing on these deals, right? It's not as if Alvin signed for 5
right.
and Rutherford for 3, and there was like an idea of transition, an idea of like, you know, Rutherford's going to push the team to be aggressive, Alvin's the longer-term steward, and they're, you know, we're setting up matching term. It matches the term left on their captain's sweetheart deal. The Canucks formally told us what their window is. That's my take. Now,
mm-hmm.
my impression is I think Alvin has improved as a spokesperson. His level of comfort in that arena at the dais, handling questions, discussing his vision, just about as significantly as his team has over the past 12 months. I thought his level of message discipline, just like really coming back to process-oriented stuff, Abbotsford, you know, he uses the same language as Rick Tocchet and then shows you what his staples and principles are by talking about player development and empowerment and alignment. And I thought that was extremely effective. I think his improvement as a spokesperson is just massive. Like, at one point, he used the fact that he was on TV and probably being watched by a fair number of people to, like, sell players on the idea, like, come bet on yourself for with a one-year deal with our team.
Yeah, look what we've done for these guys that
we've got
in.
This great coach. Yep. Like, that's literally setting himself up for 6 months. That's chess right there, man. So I was just wildly impressed. Like, it's a transformation from him.
My big takeaway was, and I want to be clear, I said this very briefly after the presser signed off, but I want to be very clear, this is a compliment, is just how similar so much of what he said in that press conference, which when you think about it, right, getting the three-year extension, you know, team is number one in the NHL, you're sending five guys to the All-Star game and your coach this weekend, you're really the toast of the league. How similar so much of what he said sounded to a press conference he might have done a year ago when they were at the exact opposite end of how they were being talked about around the league. And I think that speaks really highly, because it's easy to sell yourself as a process-focused person and always fall back on the process when the results are really poor. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, we're last in the league? Well, hey, it's all about the process. It's all about, you know, building that internal competition. It's all about this. But I think it's a lot more impressive to be so focused on process when your results are incredible. Right. And I think what Patrick Alvin didn't do at this press conference was spike the football and take a victory lap. Quite the opposite.
Absolutely not.
Quite the opposite. And again, I think this speaks really, really highly of him, that he remains focused on all those things you were listing. Right. The development in Abbotsford, the alignment with the coaching staff, empowering his hockey operations department, getting better day by day. And acknowledging that there's still a lot of work left to do. Again, very, very similar. And I think it just, when you're able to have the same messaging about your beliefs and about how to run a hockey team and how you're ultimately going to get to that Stanley Cup in such wildly different circumstances, it becomes so much easier to buy that it's 100% authentic. So you know what I mean?
I agree with you in content, right? Like, I think if you were to read a transcript of Alvin's availability 12 months ago following the Bo Horvat trade, that was a conference call, or alternatively, a transcript of his commentary after introducing Rick Tocchet following a week of the most intense criticism we've seen a front office go through.
Yeah.
Right? In this market after Lafair Boudreau. Ooh, I like that. I think it would match closely. Where I not disagree with you, but like where I'm going to pedantically shoot an arrow at that your point is the tone of it.
Sure, the performance.
The performance is night and day. That's to me is a big gap. But you know, I even think you're underplaying it where you described him as not spiking the football. Like, far from not spiking the football, like, he said things that if I said would have the inbox up in arms. Like, we haven't established ourselves yet. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Like, if we came on this program today and we were like, the thing about the Canucks' success through this point of the season is they haven't established themselves yet. If we'd said that, people would be mad. But Alvin says it. And I'm not trying to do the Jason Kelsey thing, but like, Alvin says it and it's, you know, incredibly humble, right? It is incredibly humble. Like, that's not a misframing. I'm just saying there was almost a level of self-criticism, realism, that I also think reflected well on him.
Well, and even there was commentary at one point.
What a difference a year makes, man.
No kidding. There was commentary at one point, right, where, you know, he was saying explicitly, like, hey, Tocchet and I are both process guys, and, you know, early on there's wins, but it doesn't necessarily reflect your staples and all that, right? And talking about developing those things.
Do you appreciate that Alvin might be the only person in the city that finds it funnier, the puzzle guy thing?
Yes, he brings it up a lot. Yeah, Tocchet's a puzzle guy.
Tocchet always says he's a puzzle guy.
Alvin, gotta get him those puzzle pieces.
Alvin is like, it's you, me, and Patrick Alvin on Coach Jigsaw Island.
Yes. All right. We will bring in two big pieces of our puzzle here on the show. We do it every Wednesday at at this time, it's time for the crossover with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal from Donnie and Dolly, Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Czech TV. What's going on, fellas?
I love the hat, Jimmy.
Thank you.
It takes me back.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That means a lot. Coming from a Hall of Famer. When a Hall of Famer compliments your hat, that's a big day.
I've never seen Donnie in the same room as Vancouver Canadiens gear and not compliment.
It's a great look. What are you going to do?
It is,
it's a good look.
It's amongst it's a very the most nice underrated gear in swag in Vancouver. By the way, guys, we have an echo here. Do we have technical difficulties? Have you got it?
You guys have
echo,
great
echo, echo.
Okay.
Oh, we don't have an echo? You don't have an echo?
You guys
are
sound fantastic.
We're good. Yeah, we're good.
You're gonna fight through it?
Are we live?
Rick,
we are live.
Say something.
Yeah. We're good. What? We're good. All better.
Rick,
hello.
Give him a Russian player's
test,
name
one, two,
to pronounce.
Test. 1, 2, 3, test.
He just did that.
Live radio, you can't beat it.
All right. Patrick Alvin, the news today. Nice gift for all of us during the bye week. Something to chew on, something to digest. What do you guys make of the Patrick Alvin extension, multi-year, three-year extension as GM of the Vancouver Canucks?
Yeah, it's such a no-brainer, and it links up with the extension likewise that Jim Rutherford signed. Does it seem longer than 2 years that he's been here? There's been a whole lot of work there. 19 trades, I believe, 6 since the start of the season, and most you give the thumbs up to, no-brainer. And then look at the overall standings. This was a no-brainer. And hey, look. Other than Jim Rutherford, who in this town, who knew much about Patrick Alvin?
He
seemed like a head scratcher and done a pretty good job. And Rick mocks me for this. I've said it for like a couple of weeks now, but depending on how they do in the first round or two of the playoffs, Jim Gregory award candidate, maybe even the front runner at this point.
He's got to be the front runner.
Who would have guessed it?
He's got to be.
He's got to be.
He has to be. No question.
Yeah.
Who else would even be in the mix?
Yeah.
Well, the only thing is, I didn't know this, Thomas, and you might know more about this than I do, or Rick does, believe it or not, but I believe the Jim Gregory Award, Elliot made us aware of this, isn't voted on until the second round of the playoffs, or the second
that's
round of the playoffs
true.
Is over.
And we do see
so
that
might
we do see that.
Into it.
Most years, it's like the GMs in the conference final, you know what I mean? Like, all three of the GMs made the conference final, so they're, but, you know, I mean, at this point, interestingly, too, the sports books don't take bets on it. So it's not like we can go check and factually tell you who the favorite is. But to me, if you look at body of work, volume of moves, the scale of the changes, the only other contender at this point in the season, in my view, should be Cheveldayoff. Like, it's Alvin with a bullet.
Yeah, for sure. But I love that Alvin has been aggressive. You know, for a guy who hasn't been a GM very long in the NHL, he doesn't hold back, but it helps to have an experienced voice like Rutherford in the building, right? Let's be honest, guys. Jim's got to approve a lot of stuff that goes on, right? And, you know, you got an experienced guy that has been a GM of 3 Stanley Cups right in the same office. People talk about his trades, but what I like about him is July 1st. He's not out there, you know, giving out term and ridiculous bucks. And we found out with the previous regime, long-term contracts on July 1st can cripple a team, and he's not doing that. And, you know, we had a poll question, guys, today, and a resounding, you know, their hiring, Patrick Alvin's hiring of Rick Tocchet, it was number one move that our listeners, said was his best move, was getting Rick Tocchet here.
No question.
Hard
right?
to argue with it when you see the performance for how many
Before
guys have improved.
It's it's like the old flying V logo. If you put it on a graph, team's performance pre-Tocchet, team's performance post-Tocchet. It's the flying
that's
V.
Good.
Yeah.
What did you think?
Yeah, and you know what?
Ahead.
Like, I was going to say one more thing on Tocchet. They obviously knew about him from their days together in Pittsburgh and the success there with Mike Sullivan. But as a head coach, he didn't have that much success. Yeah. So it just seems like a no-brainer now. But you know, from the, and Rick talking, I think a lot of us thought, well, this is going to work because he was a tough hockey player and he was, you know, he won Stanley Cups and all that as a player. But as a head coach, there wasn't a lot of success there. So again, hats off to them for believing in him and seeing what he could do under Mike Sullivan and hiring him with the Canucks. I don't think it was a slam dunk at the time, at least not from the outside looking in.
Well, absolutely, guys. If you talk to people around the league too, they all say the same things. Look at the job the Tocchet has done in Vancouver. Bottom line, this core's been here a long time. Why is this core taken off under him and not the previous two coaches? Well, guess what? He's a big reason why.
I bet there's a lot of teams that are looking around and wishing that they had offered Rick Tocchet, given the job that he's done here. I mean, again, they obviously had confidence in him, but they've said, we didn't even expect this turnaround. It's been phenomenal work by Tocchet.
They didn't.
You know, Patrick Alvin, you know, he plays it pretty close to his chest, right? Doesn't tip his cards necessarily, but he did talk a little bit about the mentality going into the deadline, and especially, you know, hey, we don't want this to just be a one-year thing. We want to make sure that this is sustainable, but also didn't rule out adding a piece. What do you guys think of what Alvin had to say about what the team might do at the deadline?
Well, I go back to him, I believe it was on 650, clip of his, an interview with him saying he owes it to the players to be aggressive, which to me signals that they're going to make some sort of, or try to make some sort of a major move. But then you hear that what he said today, and it makes you think that he has no intention to mess around with the future. When you talk about owing the players something, I wonder if part of the thinking is, and I always think this when I hear about, look at what the Bruins or the Rangers did at last year's deadline. That didn't work out. You owe it to the players to be aggressive, but on the other side, do you owe it to the players to see what this group can do come crunch time?
Yeah.
Really interesting times. Pleasant problem, right? But you know, which approach will he take? Because we're hearing different things in the last week or so.
Well, Rick, let me set you up. Okay. Go ahead.
Now, let me get this in. listening to Alvin today, he gets back into town yesterday from Phoenix, where Rutherford, all the scouts, everybody was for five-day meetings, for the scouting meetings. Isn't it surprising? Look, there would have been a ton of discussion for Alvin and Rutherford and the scouts in Phoenix in the past 5 days about, you know, good debate, discussion about the prospect pool. What do we do? Look, they have finally built up the prospect pool. It was in shambles when this new regime got here, right? Now, so there would have been a lot of scouts in Arizona that would have been fighting for, hey, we got a decent prospect pool. Let's be careful. That's what I got from Alvin today is, you know, don't everybody thinks the Canucks are going to go after a big name. Don't be surprised if they don't. They might go after a middle name range or whatever. There's nothing written in stone that they're going to they'll look into everything. But I'm just telling you, there's nothing written in stone that they're going to go after a big name. And, you know, and also who in Abbotsford is ready to step in next year? How many times has Alvin said in the last couple of weeks, we're going to need kids from Abbotsford? You know why he's saying that? They can't re-sign all their seven UFAs. So Abbotsford is going to be big. Who can step up next year if they can't re-sign all these seven UFAs? But I'm just telling you, everybody thinks they're going to add all these big names at the deadline. Don't be surprised if it's not a big name. If the price is too high, they can't do it.
Well, the other thing, Rick, is if you add to a team that's pressed up against the cap, you necessarily have to subtract.
Yeah.
What are you hearing about Big Z and Andre Kuzmenko? What's the latest?
Well, on Big Z, do you know him well enough to call him Big Z?
No.
Isn't it Big Zed?
Isn't it Big Zed? Are you on phone calls with him to call him Big Z, Thomas?
You know what? Fair comment. No,
I've never heard any.
Does Milstein call him
no,
that?
No, I'm just joking. I've never heard any. exactly. Look, I was told today the Canucks are not trying to trade Nikita Zadorov or Big Z, as you call him, Tom. I believe there's Zadorov, Tom, Thomas, whatever.
Tommy.
The Big T. I believe the Zadorov rumors.
I was just
the
trying
Canucks
to make it easier for you to pronounce.
Hey. I'll call him Big Z if you want me to. Well, you let me finish the story,
I want
Thomas,
you to call him
crying out loud.
Zorodov.
Yeah.
I'm not calling him. I'm calling him Zadorov. Listen, quit your cackle. Listen to me. As of now,
see what I got to put up with every day here.
Ah, Tim, it's French. Let me finish. As of now, Thomas, I can report the Canucks are not trying to move him. But I will say this, because a lot of people are taking shots at the media for this this rumor. I'll say this. Elliot Friedman's a good friend of mine. Elliot Friedman doesn't drop stuff just for the hell of it. Where there's smoke, there's fire. Every single thing Elliot comes up with, there is something there. So I think a lot of us heard something on the weekend about Zadorov, but Dan Milstein says he won't be traded. He told me on Monday. And, you know, there's, you know, I'll just say this. I'll back my good friend Friedman, but I've been told the Canucks are not going to trade him. Not going to trade him.
Speaking of,
as of right now, as of today.
Speaking of Elliot Friedman and not throwing things out there lightly, he also mentioned, now he did frame this as more speculation on his part, but Andrei Kuzmenko, Chicago as a potential destination. You know, another Milstein client here, he says they're not trading Zadorov. What are you hearing on Kuzmenko, and could Chicago be a potential landing spot?
I said a couple weeks ago, the teams are calling.
Yeah.
On Kuzmenko, but nobody's made an offer. I said that last week. Is it a surprise, guys? He hasn't scored in 13 games. He's obviously, if you're getting healthy, scratched, and benched in October, November, December, what's going to happen in the playoffs? Is this a player that Tocchet can, say get out there in the playoffs if he can't play his style of game? It should be of no surprise to anyone that his name is in the rumor mill, Kuzmenko. But if it happens or not, Jamie, I don't know. Like, his name's out there. Canucks need to clear cap space. But I'm not hearing anything imminent with Chicago and Vancouver on Kuzmenko.
But that's a great point about the playoffs. Yeah. I mean, the trust that he...
Absolutely.
Well, he hasn't shown any trust in Kuzmenko. This side of the 39 goals last season. But in a tight playoff game...
That's it.
He's just going to be he is going to be staple to the bench. And if they could get something for him now, and maybe a young team like Chicago has to get up to the floor, that would make a whole lot of sense. And maybe it's the best thing for him as well. Big
Donnie,
K.
Look at his ice time in close games, in one goal games in the third period. He gets two or three shifts, right? And what's going to happen in the playoffs? If you can't trust him against Columbus, they just played four of the five teams on the homestand that weren't super-duper teams, other than Toronto, while the Blues are coming on. But if you can't trust this guy in the third period in games in January, February, how are you going to trust him in the playoffs?
Rick, how much do you think the softness of the rental market, if anyone wants to go read at The Athletic, we built a list of like 10 rentals for the Canucks to consider. And man, there are not a lot of pending UFAs that are high-level, star-level guys.
That's it.
Especially if Jake Gensel doesn't shake loose. How much might that guide the Canucks to look a little longer term?
Well, I was just told that, look, they're going to be active. They're going to make calls. They're going to look into everything. But it's got to make sense, right, Thomas? It's got to make sense. You have got Pettersson out with his hand for a huge raise. Mm. Hronek's looking at a huge raise. You got seven UFAs.
Don't forget Besser at the end of next season as
you got
well.
Besser at the
end. Maybe they didn't think about going into this season.
Big time, right there. And you've got kids in Abbotsford knocking on the door to move up. All these things have to be, Thomas, in consideration when you know, Gensel is going to, he's not getting a pay cut on his current deal.
Nope. Like,
If you hear of some numbers for Gensel in the offseason, crazy numbers. You know, I'm hearing crazy numbers for Chris Tanev July 1st. Like, you know, there's 10-plus teams after him. You know what happens on July 1st. You know, you don't need 10 teams on July 1st to strike you rich. You need one team to call you and strike a deal and overpay for you. You don't need 10.
But isn't it great we can have this conversation?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm talking about for long-suffering Vancouver hockey fans, people who listen to your show, who watch our show. Though I don't know how many people watch our show, but a lot of people listen to
all the Swifties.
And we can have this conversation. Now, all the Swifties, well,
you guys are going viral in the Swiftie corner of the universe.
I know. It just, in case you were criticizing the NFL for, you know, the broadcast for showing her every 10 seconds, there's a good reason for that. But look, I mean, this is a great time. There are all these pleasant problems for the Canucks.
Yeah.
What should they do? I don't know. Well, it's because they're going to the playoffs that we're having this conversation.
Yeah, we're in
it's
for
great.
Some good
I'll
hockey.
Explain that, by the way, Thomas. Yeah, but I don't know if you guys have talked about this today, but Ross Tucker, who's a regular on our show, NFL regular, is from the same hometown, Pennsylvanian hometown, as Taylor Swift. So they talked to each other after the Chiefs and Ravens on Saturday. He mentioned it on our show yesterday. Some Swiftie, a Twitter account, picked it up. Well over 200,000 views in a matter of hours. We've never had that before.
No.
And it just goes to show you the power of our show.
I love that. Yeah, Swifties are going to learn who Dan Milstein is now. they're going to be all up to date on everything happening with Milstein.
And maybe Big Z.
Yeah,
Big Z and Milstein,
their favorite hockey player.
I also like the idea that Henderson's like going to start up in the group chat, being like, "Rick, you got to sing Shake It Off." Thursday morning, Rick sings Shake It Off.
Got to keep those views. Got to stay viral. But to your point, Donnie, about what a good position this feels like for Canucks fans, right? And I do think, you know, as much as we talk about, well, do they owe it to the players or should they let this group go? I mean, I think the opportunity that this team has, fans are so engaged. Fans are so excited right now. I think they kind of have to try to do something to make maximize their odds of going on a long playoff run here, because it's been so long since we've had that in this city, obviously since 2011, you know, the bubble not happening in the city. So that's a little different. I just think, you know, they talked when they re-signed Rutherford about revitalizing the brand. The best way to do that is not just make the playoffs, but take a team that's really, really good right now and go deep. And, you know, I think if you have a chance to add even a rental, if it increases your odds of doing that, like, the benefit for the fans and from a business perspective could be massive for this team.
Yeah, or do you, you know, keep the band together and
chemistry.
And see how they do? It's interesting because, you know, we talk about adding something.
Yeah.
And so I think the number one thing people talk about is a top six forward.
Yeah.
And yet where are they when it comes to goals scored?
Second in the league.
You know, second in the league. And yet, we all agree they need more from that so-called second line. It's pretty interesting. And a lot of that, and Rick made this point on our show today, it was the best point you made on the show today, about their defense and how much it's contributed
to
the offense. So there's room for improvement there, but it's just interesting that their number one problem, you wonder if it's a problem at all.
Yeah, everybody keeps talking about top six forward. They're second in the league in goals for, guys. You know, and Quinn Hughes is a big part of that, right? He brings so much offense from the back end. But I tell you, like, I was just told today that, you know, everyone's expecting a big name to end up in Vancouver. Maybe that doesn't happen, and they just add depth or whatever else there is. But the expectations are so high in Vancouver, and obviously they're going to look into something. But don't be surprised if they just add around the edges as well.
You brought up Chris Tanev. To me, I don't know. Yep. As you said, there's going to be a lot of teams interested in July 1st. You know, you're hearing some crazy prices potentially. But, you know, that was all. The only reason the Zadorov stuff made any sense to me was, okay, do you send him out so you can get Chris Tanev in? Is that the kind of thing, like, if you think you can get a deal done with Chris Tanev, right, where you're not sure you can with Nikita Zadorov, like, is that a situation you could see? Hey, bring in Tanev, get him signed for an extension before he even hits the open market in July?
I don't know, because I was told that when Zadorov was signed, that he was traded for by Vancouver, that they would get an extension done at some time, right? Milstein worked really hard to get Zadorov to Vancouver, and I was told that, you know, part of the plan was, you know, we're going to seriously take a run at signing this guy, right? So I don't know if something went sideways or whatever, but the plan was, when it comes to Chris Tanev, and if he hits the free agent market July 1st, I know one thing. Chris Tanev loves Vancouver. He's got a lot of good friends here. And I would believe that, I don't know if the Canucks can afford him or whatever. Yeah. They got Myers out there. Isn't it interesting? And Donnie and I talked about this. Myers and Tanev are going to be 34 on July 1st. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have a lot of teams after him, you know. And they're going to – because why, guys? They're right shot D, veteran
defenseman.
D. Tanev is so well-respected in the league by coaches, GMs, and players. Vancouver will be high on his list, guys. I know that for a fact, but I don't know if the Canucks can get him on July 1st.
Thanks, gentlemen. Love doing this crossover with you. And in brackets, this edition of the crossover, by the way, is Taylor's version. Don Taylor's version.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I got a big laugh. I don't know.
Rick
don't know.
Has no idea. Yeah, I actually know what you're talking about. Rick has no clue.
I don't have a clue. I'm looking at Thomas right now, and I'm clueless looking at Thomas as usual.
Hey, that was
I'll try and have a big Z. I'll try to have a big Z update for you next week,
Thank
Thomas.
You. All right. Big Z. We love him here. All right. Thanks,
a
fellas.
A big Z update from Big D.
Let's go. Guys.
We'll do this next week. Thanks, guys. That is Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal from Donnie and Dolly on Check TV. You can check them out Monday to Friday, 10 to noon. Yeah, I think Ryan Henderson really liked your Taylor's Version joke there.
It was
that.
Quality.
It was quality. It was pretty good.
I needed to redeem myself after using a nickname and getting called out for it.
I just love the idea of the Swifties being like up to date on all the latest Canucks rumors now.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure. I mean, that would be... look, it's worked for the Chiefs. You get a lot of calls.
Seriously.
You get a lot of calls. You get a lot of ratings.
Let's do this. Let's get the Canucks in there.
They actually... You know what? I mean, they do need that celebrity component. They've got Michael Bublé. That's helpful.
Yeah.
Chad Kroger here and there.
Sure.
They could use some Swift-like heat.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everyone could.
Everyone could. Truly.
Most famous person in the world. Pretty crazy. I think she's more famous than anyone has ever been in my lifetime.
You know, I was thinking about it too. Like,
or at least that I can remember. Because I guess Michael Jackson, I can't really remember the height of his fame. You know what I mean? This is the most famous anyone's ever been that I can remember.
Barack Obama?
So I guess accepting U.S. presidents.
Okay.
Because they're in like a different category.
Yeah.
I guess maybe like the Pope.
Yeah. The Pope. I don't know. The Pope's famous for like the role. The role's famous. No, I was thinking about it because I was listening to the Colin Cowherd rant.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just like, you know, I'm kind of like into this storyline. Like, not that I've like followed it like celebrity gossip. Like, I don't really care. But like, I think it's cool.
Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah, I think it's cool that a guy shot his shot on a podcast and landed like a partner, and they seem to like be happy and supportive of one another. And I think they're both like, I enjoy what both of them do.
You know, it'd be cool.
That's it. Like,
yeah.
It's that simple for me. Is that weird?
It'd be so cool if you guys went to break.
Relax.
I'm talking about wish casting using a podcast format to shoot your shot.
And Dom shooting his shot. Please go to break. All right.
Please, you're keeping yourselves waiting on the other
side. Fine,
yeah. Oh, no.
We will go to break. More reaction to Patrick Alvin signing an extension with the Vancouver Canucks. Coming up next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Big opinions and good bets. It's the People Show with Bick Nizar. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, this makes me laugh every time. What a great find. Good job. Dom, we give you a lot of sass on the show.
Yeah,
good job by you, Dom.
This rocks.
Good job by you.
I give it back. Yeah,
you do. Welcome back to Canucks Talk.
And if you can't go to break, you can never broadcast again.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here. Live from the Kintech studio, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. The hotline is brought to you by Dispatch Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. The first call, the only call. And by the way, Donnie and Dolly were brought to you during the crossover by the Dispatch Plumbing hotline. They were coming to us on the Dispatch Plumbing Hotline. The iconic Coors Light Chill Train is heading to Las Vegas for the big game, and it just made a stop in Vancouver, leaving behind a trail of epic prizes. On February 1st and 2nd, from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., look for its frozen tracks at Robson Square for a chance to win instant prizes that deliver big game day chill, or the ultimate grand prize, a trip to next year's big game event. Learn more at CoorsLight.ca/ The Chill Train. All right. Back into the show. Yeah, there you go. Patrick Alvin, we talked just really general about our impressions, kind of takeaways, and how he's developed as a speaker, the consistency of the message during his, you know, now 2-year tenure as the Canucks general manager, how little it's changed. But as you said, lots to chew on in the specifics from the presser as well.
So do you want to play a game?
Do I ever?
Coach Jigsaw language here.
Is it a puzzle game?
Do you want to play a game? It's not a puzzle game.
All right.
Here's what I'm thinking.
Okay.
I'm going to read you Alvin quotes.
Okay.
Okay?
And am I going to guess if they're from today or?
No, that would have been a fun game.
Yeah.
No, you're going to rate out of 10 how much you think we should read into it.
Okay.
And I'd like to invite everyone to use the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text box and rate along with Jamie.
Okay.
Okay? And I'll leave you to.
So how much this signifies, basically.
Yeah.
Well, how much we should read into it.
How much this means.
Okay.
So I want to start with the commentary about the Pettersson thing,
mm-hmm.
where in discussing more generally the idea of signing Hronek, Pettersson, so it wasn't specifically about Pettersson, it was in general about offseason priorities, he talked about how you can't give one player too big a piece of the pie. Was that a shot? Like, what? How much can you read into that?
I am going to read like a 6 into that. I don't think it was a shot at Pettersson as much as it was like a generalized talking about managing the salary cap.
Yep.
Because I have been pretty consistent on this, that I would be stunned if the Pettersson situation ends up goes to a divorce because of a disagreement over dollars.
Right.
And so I don't think it's. I don't think this is Patrick Alvin trying to drive the Pettersson price down, because as we've heard from Elliot Friedman and again today on our station on Halford and Brough, you know, they're ready. They are ready to back up the Brinks truck with a whole lot of money whenever Elias Pettersson is ready. So it's very, very difficult for me to believe that they're going to try to grind him down. And that's why this is going to fall apart and that this is part of that messaging. I think maybe does it apply a little more to Filip Hronek? Yeah, I could see that, right? Hey, if he's asking for absolute top-of-the-market dollar, that might be tough for us to accommodate. I think it's also just in general, okay, if we're going to play a player X, that's going to necessitate sacrifices and things we have to do elsewhere on the roster. But I don't think this is, hey, Pettersson, you're asking for too much, and we want to grind you down. I don't think it's that.
Fair. So 6 out of 10, I think that's about
right. Someone texted in a 10! Shots fired! Spicy. I like it.
Hey, congratulations. You're now a credentialed media, a member of the Vancouver Hockey Media. Do we go all in? Alvin asked.
Mm-hmm.
It's something we discuss with our staff because any short-term decisions will impact the long-term planning.
I'm going to say this is a 3. Okay, because I, you know, as Don Taylor said in the crossover, if you listened to just this presser, I think you would probably come away with the impression that the team is very reluctant to go all in. But I think this stuff, and again, it wasn't that long ago, but he gave an interview with Ian McIntyre where he said, you know, we owe it to the players to support them and make sure we do everything we can to set them up for success. I think, again, you have to read this through the lens of those kind of fundamental principles that Patrick Alvin keeps coming back to, right? Where, yes, you want it to be sustainable, but as we've heard from Jim Rutherford, you want to build a sustainable window, but that doesn't mean you never take your shot. That doesn't mean you never are aggressive and push some chips into the middle during the deadline, at the deadline, right? So you can, you know, yes, you have to be aware of the impact that your present moves are having on the future. That doesn't mean you don't make present moves. I think he's just talking about the thought process that's going to go into it, how careful they're going to be, the discussions they're going to have. It has to be the right fit. But I don't think if you're hearing that and saying, oh, okay, they're not going to trade their first round pick this year, I think you're reading way, way too much into that quote.
I think that's a good take.
Thank you.
I don't want to get into specific needs, Alvin began. But in general, we're looking at different areas and what's available regarding his club's posture at the deadline. We all know you need to have depth down the stretch to be successful. So we'll see and act accordingly based on what's available. How much do you read in that?
That's like a 1.
Really?
Yeah.
I disagree with you.
So you think that points the needle away from high end to depth acquisitions?
I think that's absolutely a general manager who at least wants to, like, he'll buy. But he at least wants to manage the market's expectations that, like, I'm not gonna spend a ton of assets on an Adam Henrik.
Sure. That's fine. But I you could position Adam Henrik as adding depth. You know what I mean? And now all of a sudden you bump Hugh Suter down and you've increased your depth.
In fact, that's the right way to position Adam Henrique.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I like, again, it's just such a general answer of, hey, what do you need? Well, we could a lot of different things.
I feel like it's a back away anyway from the more like gung ho, we owe it to the players.
Yeah, but I think that's, you're right. Okay, that quote did come from Patrick Alvin, but I feel like we're kind of used to this dynamic now where like Jim Rutherford is going to give the really heavy quotes and Patrick Alvin is going to give the like, well, we'll see. You know what I mean? But it doesn't mean that the opinion has shifted from when Jim Rutherford spoke. I think it's just their different way of communicating.
I didn't anticipate that, says Alvin, of the level of the club's success this season, but I did anticipate that our younger players could take a big step with better structure around them.
So what I'm trying to think. I don't know. Like, you know what? I'll go high on this.
Yeah, I think so, too.
I'll go high. I'll go like an 8.
I think that tells you a lot about Alvin's like assessment of this club's upside.
Mm.
Guiding some of the moves over the past year.
Right. That even if they didn't see it like this, they had a confidence that the right coach could unlock something in this group.
I think it's the clearest distillation we've had from him of the bet he placed in his mind. That's how I see it anyway.
Yeah, that's fair. And I mean, it is interesting because you look at the turnaround this year, and we all know Rick Tocchet has played a huge part, but you could also point to the work they did in the summer and the depth pieces they brought in, and we've listed them, you know, many, many, many times here. But it's fascinating to hear him say, not that, you know, I thought we had improved our team, but that specifically I thought our young players that were already here could take a step forward as we've seen them do, right?
It's fundamentally, too, it's the focus. He's actually focused on the right thing, and he keeps talking about it, buying in. Not worrying about your points, but worrying about team success. Individual greatness comes from team success. It's all part and parcel, right, of the same thing, the buy-in you're getting. And this club is not close to where they are right now. For all that we can talk about the rebuilt defense or Hronik or Lafferty and, you know, Dakota Joshua, on and on.
Yeah.
Quinn Hughes is playing at a Norris level.
Yep.
Demko's playing at a Vezina finalist level. JT Miller's two-way form has bounced back in a significant way ever since Tocchet took over, especially when compared with some of what we saw last year. Elias Pettersson, you know, has been at his best with less help over the course of the season. I mean, he's fifth in the league in points per 60, right? Like, he's just dominant. You're not close to where you're at without those four.
Yeah,
all
even if you
firing.
Ace. Even if you ace the offseason depth acquisitions the way you did.
You could be good.
Yeah.
You could be good, but you don't go nuke the way the Canucks have in 49 games without those guys to a man, not just leveling up, but like in some cases leveling up to a historic, right? I mean, we are talking about Brock Besser having cleared 30 goals at the All-Star break. I'm telling you now, we will be talking about Quinn Hughes and the chase for 20 goals over the balance of the season.
Chase for 100 points.
Well, that's happening.
I think you're right, but you never know.
He needs 30 points. Yeah. He needs like 32 points.
That's still a point per game. That's really good.
He's definitely doing that.
Yeah, look, I'd bet on it too, but I'm not going to chalk it up.
Well, so long as he stays healthy, he's hitting that with ease. Anyway, wow, pretty cool, by the way, to be a defenseman, have a brother who's one of the best centermen in the league and hit 100 points
before
he does.
That is pretty sweet.
that's jerk older brother
stuff for
sure. That's
bragging rights right there.
All right. So anyway, I just thought that was, for me, that was almost the quote of the press conference.
Well, and I think that emphasis on the young talent and that core group also illustrates why, because we have people texting in, you know, people are starting to maybe get a little anxious about the Elias Pettersson thing. And so we have people texting in from time to time like, oh, like, trade him then, or let him walk, or whatever. Like, we don't need that here. And I think that focus illustrates why the team has been very, very consistent from ownership to the president to the GM. We love Elias Pettersson. We want him to stay because they know how important that high-end talent is to the whole project here.
Well, and I also think it dovetails with this, right? You don't want to be a one-year hit, says Alvin. We're back to the game, by the way.
Yeah.
I want you to rate this, and then we'll get back to the discussion we were having. You have to sustain it. The trick isn't to make the three-point shot. It's to make it 50 times, right? Something we talk about a lot.
Yeah.
Out of 10.
I'm going to give that a 7. That feels like the more significant, maybe they'll be a little more cautious at the deadline quote than some of the other ones, right? And especially the one about, well, you need depth. Like, this one feels like if they are going to, let's say, have a quiet deadline and he's speaking after the deadline and some of the questions are, hey, why didn't you go out and do more? This is the talking point he's going to come back to. You know what I mean? Of, hey, we don't want this to just be a one-year thing. We're thrilled with where we are, but we also recognize that this is a process. Now, I don't think that going all in or trading a first-round pick and a good prospect means that you're sacrificing the future or that you're not trying to build something sustainable. Makes it more difficult, no doubt about it, but I don't think it precludes, I don't think that language precludes making a big aggressive move at the deadline either.
Yeah, I just think the thing this makes me think of, and I don't think it's what Alvin was talking about, but the one big honking piece of business, right, that this management group has not gotten done remains the Pettersson thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's it. And when I consider that, when I really think about it, right, that to me is the is where this experiment hinges, right? If you're going to sustain this, Pettersson is essential, right? Like, there's no replacing him.
No.
In terms of having a similar ceiling as Alvin was.
And even look at if you tried to do the Calgary version, right? Like, look how that turned out for them. And we all thought it looked great at the time. Like, wow, you got two contributing pieces right now.
Yeah, I liked it for their short term.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, you remember we were doing the People show.
Yeah.
I was like, I'd love this even more if they didn't sign Huberto.
Yeah,
That might have been my strongest take about the trade.
Turned out to be good. But it's like, you can theorize how that might come, how you might be able to add similar talent or whatever, or, you know, a tier down, but in multiple pieces, but it's still an incredible risk to try to do that. So you're right. There's no like, oh, well, just trade him and get that package and move on. Like, that completely alters your timeline and the project of what you're trying to do with this team.
Yeah. So it's an interesting one too, because if there is uncertainty, I do think you have to be all in this year.
Yeah.
Like, if, you know, I'm on record. I'm not worried about this. The club has they don't have tons of time. I think that's a misnomer. There is urgency. But as much as, like, the fact pattern is pointing in a direction where I think concern is valid, I don't think you can operate fearfully. You know what I mean? Like, I think the club, but in their heart of hearts, they know the player better. They know the situation better. In their heart of hearts, if they're not certain, they have to push their chips into the center of the table this year. Just my view of it. Anyway, it depends on market price, says Alvin, of what it would take to trade the club's 2024 first round pick. There's excitement about our prospects from other teams based on my conversations with them, so we have assets here. Is that a humble brag?
I think I'm that's like a 1 to me.
Yeah.
A 1 or a 2.
But was it a humble brag? Do you interpret it as like a, we've done a really good job stuffing?
Maybe a little bit. Yeah. Hey, we're excited about our prospects. But I don't think, again, if you were like ranking most likely assets to move, you don't downgrade the first round pick based on that quote.
No.
You know what I mean?
I think you upgrade it.
All right.
And I think you should. You know, like, how many prospects would you list that you think are more valuable than the 2024 first? In this organization, I'm curious to get your thoughts.
Lekera, Mackey, and Villander?
Is that it?
Probably.
I think that's it.
Yeah. Like, Brustevich, no. Ratu, no.
Nope.
Silovs, no.
Pod Colson,
no. I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
So really, I think it's those are the three prime assets. The first, Villander, and Lekera, Mackey.
Okay. Well, that's the game.
All right.
Good job, buddy.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I think we can say in this game, which only featured one competitor,
I'm the winner. I have the highest score by default. I love that. Love when that happens. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. A lot of people, by the way, thought that the comment about can't give somebody a whole piece of the pie or whatever it was, the exact wording, was like a 9 or a 10 on the read into it scale. And we'll do the whiteboard. We did push Bukla to tomorrow when we're going to do our big trade idea show. So Books is going to join us tomorrow.
Call it by its name.
No, I will not. It's our big trade idea show.
Big trade, super
catchy name on my part.
Big trade ideas show. It's like you're 100. I mean, come on, man. It's like, step right up, do our best.
That's right.
You held a note there, too. That was impressive.
What?
Show.
I'm just saying, this guy's at like the St. Louis World's Fair, and no one's at his, what do they call it?
Sounds great.
Booth?
Yeah.
No one's at
what do they call it?
Booth? Kiosk?
Thomas the Wordsmith Drance.
Hut? I mean, very much like Abraham Lincoln's Secret Service, right? Hard sometimes to find the booth.
Oh, wow. All right. Deep cut there.
What do you mean, deep cut? Too soon?
All right. What was I even saying? Oh, we'll do the whiteboard. We'll do the whiteboard next, and keep your thoughts coming in as well.
Sure.
There we go. That's what I was trying to say.
Sounds
I did
good.
It. More Canucks talk coming up here on Sportsnet 650.
That's one thing that I've learned from Jim, to stay ahead of it. Communication with other GMs around the league and see what's available and what the price tag in is on certain individuals. And if it makes sense for us, as we've shown and Jim has shown in the history, we're not going to just sit and wait.
That was Canucks general manager Patrick Alvin speaking to the media earlier today, fresh off signing a 3-year extension with the team. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of 5-star Google reviews. Sore feet. What are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. So there you go. That was a little bit of if a lot of the messaging from Alvin maybe sounded a little conservative going into the deadline. You know, he acknowledges that he's learned from Jim Rutherford. Stay on top of things. Get ahead of things. Maybe do your work ahead of the deadline as well. I do think it was funny at one point as well. Somebody asked him about how aggressive he might be at the deadline. He said, well, I have a very aggressive boss who talks to me every day about being aggressive.
That was awesome.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, Jim Rutherford likes to make trades and likes to go for it. Speaking of trades and trade targets, of course, it's the bye week here for the Canucks, which means up at the Athletic for you. It's been trade week.
It's going to be trade
you
month.
And Harm at the Athletic.
I hope you like, I hope feasting. You like trade content.
And everyone does.
Because it's all I'm doing.
Everyone does, or at least almost everyone does. It is. Who doesn't?
Yeah.
Why would you not like trade content?
Especially this year, like, you know, I'd
be positive trade
content.
I'd
be doing it anyway, but man, is it more fun when you're thinking about like how pieces fit with a team that has a shot as opposed to, you know, the value resuscitation exercises that we've been focused on the last 2 years. So yeah, no, it's a ton of fun. I feel like the ice cream man, you know? It's like you hear like do and it's like trade content.
Trade talk targets. Well, I like how you parceled it out too, because
you know that sound in the summer and everyone's just like,
oh yeah, it's the ice cream truck.
Literally people just start whipping around like they're inflatable wavy arms people. That's the trade seagulls come deadlines.
The ice cream truck rolling up in the summer, or like early, you know, late spring but the weather is nice, to like the T-ball Little League park like 100 kids at the park. It's like, whoa, here we go.
And like, if you put it in time lapse, it could basically be narrated by Richard Attenborough.
Yes. Migration. Anyways, what are we talking about here? Oh yeah. I like how you parceled out the trade content.
Nonsense. We're talking about nonsense.
You know, you start with kind of the general and you get more specific, and like people are like, give us the names. Who are they going to trade for? Who are the targets? They're like so amped up.
And then you get
today you did it.
And then you get the targets and you're like, oh,
no,
I am. Cause like we put this rental list together and I'm like, ugh, if Jake Guentzel doesn't shake loose, I think it's a really weak class of rentals. And so we listed 10 rentals today, and there's like three guys that I would be like very confident were sharp moves for the Canucks to make.
Yeah, there were a couple of names. So we've talked about the three at the top a lot, right? Gensel, number one, Lindholm and Henrique, obviously, up forward. And then I guess I'll throw in Chris Tanev, who we've got. Chris Tanev is almost like a special consideration just for the Canucks because of the history. So he's almost in a different category for me. But, you know, throw Chris Tanev in there. He is a rental, obviously, a pending UFA. But there were a couple of other names on the list that stood out to me that haven't gotten as much attention. And again, are they the true all-in, you know, wow, I can't believe they got that guy quality? No, but they're also more than the kind of fiddle around the edges, I think, right? And, like, number one who stands out to me from the Seattle Kraken is Jordan Eberle.
Oh, Eberle's sick. So Eberle would be the fourth guy on that list. The problem is I really don't think they're going to deal him. Like, he's a family guy now. I can't believe he's 33. I still remember him as, like, clutch young dude, even though we're, like, I'm 4 years older.
Where's that, like, 2008?
I was in college, man.
Yeah.
You know, like, it wasn't that long ago that he was clutch young dude and then, you know, part of this, like, failed version of the Oilers' young guns.
Mm-hmm.
But he's become, like, an elder statesman, a reliable playoff performer. He's, when we talk about what this, so, it's not about goals, I think is important. I didn't have a chance to get that in edgewise, but Dolly Wall was talking about this team being second in goals scored. So why, you know, do they really need to upgrade their top six forwards? It's not about goals. It's about getting Pettersson and Miller a little bit more help from someone who can drive, right? It's about having another guy who can win the battle and make the sneaky play or be in the right position on an exit or, you know, do like the stuff Besser does sometimes is the F3 on the blue line where he keeps the puck in the offensive end and now Miller has another touch and then Quinn Hughes has another touch and then the Canucks do a partial change and then boom, you've got a goal, right? Like, it's about having one more driving piece for when the Canucks bump into a Mark Stone, Jack Eichel line in the playoffs, for when the Kings come at you with Dubois, Deneau, Kopitar, right? For when you face McDavid, right? Or McKinnon. There's a lot of bosses at the end of this video game. I think it's worth noting, right? The problem with Eberle is he's settled now in Seattle. He means a lot to that franchise. He has a lot of weight in that room. The Kraken could fall off significantly here. I mean, they lost to the Sharks 2-0 last night. But I still feel like Eberle is going to be a priority keep for that organization. That's my understanding. That's their posture. I think it would take a lot to pry him loose. So, you know, it's just a tough one to sort of wait, I suppose.
The Kraken are a really fascinating team because, as you mentioned with Eberle, pending UFA, and he's 33, like, a lot, you know, they're on the fringes of the play, or like, they're in the playoff mix, but by no means a lock. Kind of a classic profile of a guy you at least give significant thought to moving. But as you mentioned, you know, one, he has the modified no trade. I believe it's a 16-team list. So that's a lot of control that he has over the process.
Yeah, pick all the playoff teams and you're basically safe.
And as you said, you know, also the kind of soft factors of him carrying a lot of weight there. But you look at it, you know, if Seattle wanted to be really aggressive at this deadline, like, they have Eberle, they have Alex Wenberg, they have Justin Schultz, who's an expiring. But then even the other interesting class for me is the guys that they have who are this year and next, right? That's Yanni Gord this year and next. Adam Larson, who wears a letter for them, but he's this year and next. And, like, you know, those guys are veterans. They've been around for a long time. They're in their 30s. A ton of respect, really good players. And I understand, you know, especially with a guy like Adam Larson, where you're looking at it, okay, he's part of our leadership group. We want to keep him around. I just don't, like, it just feels like they would have an opportunity to be real power players here at the deadline, but it feels like they're probably just going to be pretty passive instead.
Yeah, I mean, I think they can't afford two more years missing the playoffs.
Yeah.
Ron Francis can't afford that. The organization can't afford that as they try to cement themselves in Seahawks country. Right? That's partly why, like, I think they'd have to really struggle over the next month to even sell, to even consider it. And even if they do, I think guys like Eberle are going to be important to them because they want to be back there next year, regardless of how the balance plays out. And I still think they, you know, are probably my favorite of the Striver for eighth class of teams. So, you know, I think they've got a good shot, but
Brandon Tanev, another guy this year and next as well, with obvious connections to Pittsburgh.
Yeah. They love
also who they love. Like, it was all these guys that are potential trade candidates are, yep, for the most part, also players they love there.
Well, let me give you my favorite target on the list, honestly, is Alexandre Carrier.
Of course it is.
Why? Why'd you say that?
The least notable name on the list.
What do you mean?
Of course it is.
He's a 30-point defenseman.
I like the player, but he's the least notable name on the list, other than maybe Jason Zucker.
I don't know. I think there's there's not very many notable names. Like, there's a lot of guys who've been, like, traded as cap dumps recently or are just kind of, like, you've forgotten about them because they play on bad teams like Henrique. No?
I don't know. I would say Henrique is a more notable name than Alexander Carrier.
Well, for sure. But that's name value as opposed
saying,
to
you're,
hockey value.
You're a hockey sicko. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about name value as opposed to hockey value. You're choosing the guy with the least name value.
Right. But I don't. Anyway.
I'm not saying that's a bad thing.
I don't know why I'm being annoyed by this.
I don't know why
either. Fine. You're fine. Okay. We're fine. Let's move on. Carrier. The thing with Carrier is, like, I just don't think he's going to be exorbitant to sign again. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like the Connor Clifton sort of valuation, that, like, $3.5 million valuation for, you know, a good sort of fringy top four guy. I mean, he's been a top four guy in Nashville the last 3 years, but, you know, he's a fringy top four guy. Maybe a contender views him as more of a third pair guy. He's a little undersized, but he's right-handed. He'd offer that layer of protection where I do think if you put him with Quinn Hughes, you could at least get that Ethan Bear type outcome, right? He's a productive puck mover. He's also tough. He's a good penalty killer. Like, he's not just an undersized puck mover. He's got steel to his game. To me, that's the sort of buy for a rental that I want to see, a guy who you can bring in with an eye toward keeping.
Mm.
And again, I'm so focused. If this team's only going to add depth, I really think one more puck mover, one bit of insurance, so that if you lose one of the indispensable guys at the top of your defense core, you can at least still play the same style. To me, that's worth spending meaningful assets on. And Carrier is also a guy who could, you know, project as a fit,
someone to keep
beyond this season.
Carrier is interesting. So he's making $2.5 million this year, pending UFA, only 27, so young for a pending UFA.
Yep.
No trade protection whatsoever, so that's attractive. I think for the Canucks to acquire defensemen, there's basically two categories. There's one, the pure depth. Hey, you're probably going to sit in the press box unless we need you, but we're excited to go to you if we need you, right? Or at least we feel comfortable, very comfortable going to you. And then there's the, you're clearly a top four guy, so we're willing to jump through some hoops to get you, right? The hoop probably being trading somebody like Nikita Zadorov.
And he's in between.
That's the thing. Does he clear the bar of,
I think
we're
so.
Going to sacrifice, we're going to trade Nikita Zadorov.
Well, but I see,
to get Carrier into the lineup.
For me, he's like, if you, for me, he's a pay for retention, and he's like a Mark Friedman upgrade, but a high leverage one.
Yeah, it would have to be with retention for sure.
And you know, not that you, it costs you Mark Friedman, like you have the roster spot to also keep Mark Friedman on in your lineup. But the, yeah, that's to me what he can bring.
Yeah, but I'm just saying it's if you get the salary down low enough that you're fine having him in the press box, all right, that's fine. And then look, that's an incredible depth piece to have in case you need them at any point in the playoffs. As you said, kind of a fringe top four guy. I just wonder if the opportunity cost is a little too high, right? Bringing in someone who you don't necessarily project to be a regular. Who else was your kind of three sharp potential buys? You had Carrier number one. You said there were three that you thought could be sharp.
Well, Gensel,
because sure,
he matters, and Eberle was the other.
Eberle, okay. This person.
I, although I guess it's 3.5 because I also really have a lot of time for Sean Walker, especially now that his mobility's back.
Like,
he's been a longtime favorite of mine, as you know. But then he missed a year because of a significant injury and then did not look right at any point last season. There wasn't a single game in which he looked right for the Kings, and now he's back to being awesome, and it's great.
Yeah, Walker would be an interesting one for sure. Again, I just don't know how motivated they're going to be to go after a defenseman other than Chris Tanev, right? That's still something I'm having a bit of a hard time wrapping my head around, right? Like how much of the desire is there for just defenseman X versus specifically Chris Tanev? This text comes in about another player who's on this rental list up at the Athletic right now. What about a player like Tyler Toffoli, who has played with Pettersson before?
He's on the list.
He's on the list. I don't know. I mean, does he move the needle for you at this point?
Yeah, he's good. I mean, the thing about Toffoli is you can plug him at the net front. Right? So he actually fits, like, beyond the chemistry and the fact that he's a good player and knows the people in that room would be, you know, you assume he could acclimatize more quickly than your average rental. He does fit one of Vancouver's remaining needs, which is he gives you a fifth guy for PP1.
Right.
And he gives you a guy with some size who we've seen be a super effective playmaker from down low.
You can put in that spot that Kuzmenko was there, right? You can, do that. All right, so that's a look at some of the other rentals beyond like the big three that we've talked about a lot in this market and we'll continue to talk about ahead of the March 8th trade deadline. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Fish Dancer texts in, I'm wondering why everybody seems to be so low on Hunter Brustevich. Leading the league in scoring, the OHL as a D-man is a pretty rare profile, would have to be valued higher than a late first. The thing with Brustevich as a prospect is he had fantastic numbers, not this level of numbers, obviously, but he had really strong numbers in his draft year, and yet he went in the third round, right? And we also saw it, you know, with the World Juniors U.S. team snub. That's partly related to him playing in Canada, playing in the OHL, and not
there's a political
to in the NCAA. But I think there's also a component of this is a divisive player, right? Mm-hmm. People knew that Brustevich had a lot of offensive skill and could put up points from the blue line, but there were other reasons that he dropped down in the draft. Now, has he improved his standing since then with what he's doing in the OHL? And as Fish Dancer says, the extremely rare feat of leading the league in scoring as a defenseman, a draft plus one defenseman right now? Yeah, undoubtedly. But I don't know that he's improved his stock that much. Right now, if you told me there was a team or two out there that maybe had their eye on Brustevich as well, but the Canucks got him first in the draft, and hey, they love what they see, and they would value him more than that late 2024 first-round pick, maybe. But again, just the gap from where he was very recently drafted to where this pick is going to be, I think it's too much. I don't think he's overcome that gap just yet, even with how well he's played this year.
No, I don't think he'd have the value of a first-round pick.
No, I was saying if there was, like, if you told me there was, like, one or two teams that viewed him that way, I could buy it. But in terms of general value, I don't see it.
No, I don't think he'd have that market value. But it takes a lot to have more value than a first-round pick. Like, that's a very, very high bar. He's trending in a super favorable direction, right? I mean, Brustevich is a really good prospect. But I think there'd be some distance to travel yet. Like, I think it would take him doing something like this again or translating to the A really, really well and being like a top flight point producer in the A. You know, there's this player type, this like Ty Smith would be a recent example. There's Adam Bockfist. There's still a lot of skepticism about like undersized offensive defensemen without elite skating, right? Like that's a key part of this, right? Like Quinn Hughes, you know, has those edges and that changes things in terms of how players, prospects like him are evaluated. Lane Hutson, for example. Lane Hutson would have more value than a first round pick. Think of what he's accomplished, a late first. Think of what he's accomplished over the last 2 years. It takes a lot. And Brustevich is tracking to maybe hit that level, but he's not there yet. No, I don't think
he's quite there yet either, just because, again, he was a divisive prospect going into the draft, right? And so a lot of those same doubts that you're talking about and same questions are going to remain for teams still, even with the scoring that he's putting up. No slight against him. He's having a phenomenal season, but I think that's probably where his value would be. Somebody texts in about another potential rental asking about Anthony Duclair. I don't know. Does Duclair meaningfully upgrade your top six enough to go out and pay whatever it's going to cost to get him as a rental? Obviously, the much lower cost than talking about Jake Guentzel or Elias Lindholm was, or anything. But to me, if you're going after, like, I don't know about shopping in that mid tier, right? I can see going after the very, very high end in Jake Guentzel or trying to go after some very affordable, smart depth pieces that fill really specific roles. But I don't know about just going like, well, Gensel's too expensive, so we'll go down a little bit of the list on scoring wingers, which is kind of where Anthony Duclair would fall for me. That makes me a little bit nervous. Like, you're going to still pay a fairly significant price, but not get the value back in return.
Yeah, I think you're right. And Duclair's, like, so I don't think Duclair's expiring.
He is.
Okay. Yeah. So
expiring at $3 million.
Right. Okay. So I did look at him. I get a little nervous about Duclair being similar usage wise if he came to Vancouver to what we're seeing from Kuzmenko. And I'm a big fan of the player. I really do believe in him as like a strong second line driver. His speed would be a huge asset in this Canucks lineup, but it's not a perfect fit in my view, especially once the standard we were trying to apply in building out this list was like top six drivers.
Yeah. Two-way guys.
Yeah.
Like that's the key here. Again, because otherwise, if you were just looking at
and
someone's
even then,
like,
we didn't like our list. So
but
like...
if you were just looking for somebody who's like low usage but offensive skill, it's like, well, we'll just keep Andre Kuzmenko. You know what I mean? Hey, we don't trust this guy in tough minutes, but maybe he has some utility on the power play. And if we need to chase a goal, we can use him. They already have that guy. So I think if you're moving him out, if you're trying to go for that big swing, naturally you're looking for a different type of player. You're looking for somebody who fits the puzzle that Rick Tocchet is endlessly working on better than Andre Kuzmenko here. We'll take a break in just a second. I did want to mention, I said that I thought Taylor Swift was the most famous person in my lifetime that I can recall. Some people texted in with other options. Somebody, Ian and Coquitlam, said The Rock is right there with Taylor Swift. Disagree.
Absolutely.
Strong disagree. Not as famous as Taylor Swift. Somebody else texted in Cristiano Ronaldo and or Leo Messi. I disagree with that as well.
Me too.
Very famous.
Close-ish, though.
Very famous at their peak.
That's a much better suggestion than The Rock.
But not as famous as Taylor Swift is right now. This is the winning suggestion. Princess Di.
Yeah, that's good.
That's true. I think she, at her peak.
She was huge famous.
More famous.
Big time famous.
She was very famous.
Huge famous. She was huge famous.
She was huge famous. There's one thing we can all agree on. Princess Di, huge famous.
Huge famous.
So there you go. That's the answer. Thank you to the texters for suggesting some other names in that category. All right. Somebody texted Michael Jackson. Yeah, I said other than Michael Jackson because I don't remember the peak of his popularity. But from what I understand, yes. He would have been just as famous as Taylor Swift at his peak. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll take a break here. We will do the whiteboard next. By the way, for people texting in questions about non-rental players, you guys are going to have the non-rental target list up at some point this week as well, right?
Oh, yeah. But I'd imagine tomorrow.
Continue to go to that trade content. So I'm sure we will find a time to get into that at some point this week as well. All right. We'll take the break. The whiteboard coming up next, including some commentary from Elliot Friedman about Elias Pettersson. We'll play a clip from his appearance on the morning show. Final segment of the show coming up here on Sportsnet 650.